So what does this mean? So basically, this course is a grab bag of all the topics that didn't fit neatly into another course. Topics are chosen, mostly we'll be discussing mathematical topics that have been chosen because they'll be useful to you, hopefully, throughout the course of the year. Most of the topics will have some use in quantum field theory, but there's some topics that we'll discuss that will have other applications as well. So what is the title referring to? So what we're going to discuss in this course, for the first lecture and a half or so, we will discuss distributions, which are sometimes known as generalized functions. So that's the functions in quote in the title of the course. We will then discuss, for about half a lecture, the gamma and zeta functions. Then we'll change gears and discuss Green's functions and orthogonal functions. For about two lectures. So these topics are the first functions in the title of the course. And for the final two lectures, we will discuss asymptotic series and summing divergent series for about two lectures. And so that's series of functions will be the final topic for the course. That's the et cetera. So that's where we're going. There are some connections between some of these things, but they're not. It's not going to be a coherent. We're not going to be following the same path for the entirety of the course. We'll be jumping around, sometimes dramatically, several times throughout the course. So that's where we're going on a broad level. And our first topic we'll spend today and part of tomorrow is distributions. And so what I'll just give you a bit of an outline of what we're going to discuss for the next lecture and a half. So first, we'll define what is meant by a distribution. So it's a generalization of the notion of a function. And so we'll first discuss what it's not. It's not a function. And then what distributions are. They are, in a sense, maps from functions to real or complex numbers. And we'll make that more precise over the course of the lecture. Then we'll discuss some operations we can do on distributions, such as taking the derivative of a distribution, multiplying a distribution with a function, and composing a distribution with a function. And then probably tomorrow, but we may, depending how fast we go, we might start on this a little bit today, we'll discuss an application to functional derivatives. That's where we're going. At a broad and slightly less broad scale. So Why are we learning about distributions? So you all are familiar with at least one example of a distribution that is not a function. Many functions are also distributions. That's why I say distribution is a generalization of the notion of function. But it includes objects that are not functions. And example that I hope you're familiar with is the charge density associated with a point charge. So that's not a function. Can anyone explain why? The charge density associated with a point charge is not a function.
It's a Dirac delta.
Dirac delta? Yeah, it's proportional to a Dirac delta. Very good. Well, why is that not a function? What is a function?
I mean, the Dirac delta gives one point at several. Like it says that at zero it's infinity, doesn't it?
Right, so if we are plotting the charge density, say in one dimension as a function of, it would be zero everywhere and infinite. Yes?
I was just going to say, because its properties are contradictory, because you define the Dirac delta as having, like, the integral over all space of being 1, but at the same time you say it's 0 everywhere except for at one point where it's infinity, but that if you integrate that, like, in the Lebesgue sense, that should give you 0. So.
Right, good. So the issue is what's going on with the at 0. So it... you'd like to assign, often you see it written as infinity, but you can't properly define integration by just defining a function that's zero everywhere and infinity at a point. You couldn't distinguish between delta and 2 delta, for instance, if you tried to do that. Okay, so that's a familiar example. There are other examples that will come up throughout the year that may be less familiar. Where distributions are useful. So, for instance, I'll give you slightly simplified examples, but things that are similar in spirit will come up throughout the year. So we might ask, what's the nth derivative of the absolute value function at x equal 0? So if you tried to calculate this using the rules of differentiation, you learned in your first year calculus course, you wouldn't get very far. Be undefined, depending on you couldn't make sense of this expression using those rules. We can unambiguously define this using the rules for taking derivatives of distributions. So this will have an unambiguous answer in terms of distributions. Similarly, some integrals are ambiguous. Using the ordinary rules of integration you've learned, for instance, this integral of 1 over x over the real line, you might argue it's 0, so it has bisymmetry. But you're canceling off two divergent contributions then. From the positive and negative part of the real line. And so is that really justified? We can make sense of integrals like this and ones that do have positive and negative infinite contributions that don't have a symmetry. We can unambiguously evaluate seemingly ambiguous integrals using distributions. And a final, two other applications that will come up. One is variational problems. Often don't have solutions that are functions. Many of these problems that don't have solutions in terms of functions have solutions that are distributions. So it lets us solve a wider class of problems. And I won't talk as much about this, but I will talk a little bit. Limits of sequences of functions. So it's not hard to construct a sequence of functions that looks like it should converge, but doesn't actually converge to a function. And there's several different distinct notions of convergence that we won't need to worry about the details, but being aware that there are different notions is a useful thing to keep in mind. So that's why we're going to discuss distributions. Any questions so far? Okay, so our most important example of a distribution that's not a function is the Dirac delta. Often called the Dirac delta function, which is a very misleading name. So the way you've probably seen this, or you may have seen this defined, is written something like this. The Dirac delta is equal to a limit of a sequence of functions. Where, for example, f sigma could be a top hat function. It gets narrower and narrower as we take sigma to 0. So this, something like this, where this is sigma over 2 f sigma. And if we take sigma smaller, the function will get narrower and narrower, and more peaked around 0. And might like to think that this approaches the delta function because the integral of f sigma is 1 for sigma greater than 0. And the limit at each point that's not 0 is 0. Okay, so this, I put quotes around this equality sign, because we'll see this. This is not the way we're going to ultimately end up defining delta, and we will see that there are some subtleties, and we need to be careful if we try to think about delta as a limit of sequence of functions. So what are the problems with thinking about delta as a function? So let's start with some definitions. And ultimately, these definitions will lead us to a correct interpretation of what delta is as a distribution, but we'll need some preliminary definitions along the way. And our first definition is the definition of a function space. So a function space is a vector space whose elements are, I'm going to leave a blank spot, so this will be a provisional definition. These elements are functions. And has a norm, which satisfies four properties. One, positivity. That means the norm of any function is non-negative. Unique identity. That means the norm of a function is zero if and only if the function is zero. And also triangle inequality, norm of f plus g is less than or equal to the norm of f plus the norm of g, and linear homogeneity. If lambda is a number, real or complex, then the norm of lambda f should be absolute value of lambda times the norm of f. So these are all just all the usual properties of the norm of in a vector space. So when we define a function space, we're just defining a vector space whose elements are functions. The mysterious blank space front, which I'll come back to in a few minutes. And we'll mostly be interested in function spaces that are inner product spaces. So that means that for us, an inner product space in general, the norm comes from an inner product. And we'll almost exclusively be interested in this norm. We'll consider slight generalization in a few lectures. For now, just consider the usual norm where we take the complex conjugate of one function and integrate it against the other function. Often we'll restrict to real functions. And in this case, the norm is just the square root of the inner product of the function with itself. So the main function space we'll be considering is it's called the L2 function space, defined on an interval from A to B, where A and B could be plus and minus infinity. We could define it on the entire real line, but sometimes we'll be interested in just a finite subset of the real line. So this is the set of square integrable functions. With this norm. So a square integral just means that the norm of the function is finite. And So let's see if this function space satisfies our definitions. So it should be positive. That's the way we define the inner product. But what about the uniqueness of the identity? So we consider two functions. One that's a zero function, so that clearly has zero norm. You can also consider a second function that is zero almost everywhere. Say 0 for x not equal to 1 and pi for x equals 1. This function also has zero norm. So these two functions should be identified if we want this to be a function space. So so our final definition of function spaces will be vector spaces whose elements are equivalence classes. Functions. And we need to identify any functions that differ by a finite number of points. So f1 and f2 are the same except at x equals 1, so we have to say they're in the same equivalence class. We want this to be a function space. Okay. So claimed that delta is not a function, so it shouldn't live in here. And we can see that explicitly by or if you believe that we can define delta like this, we can see that that tells us that delta does not live in this function space. We can compute the norm squared of f sigma, this top hat function. And what we get is just the integral of f squared, which is just the integral from minus sigma over 2 to sigma over 2 of 1 over sigma squared, which is just 1 over sigma. So f, which is the limit as sigma goes to 0, is undefined. So delta defined in this way is not an element of L2. And this is a rather very general function space. So we haven't imposed any conditions on continuity or differentiability. So most of the functions in here are not smooth in any way. So it's not a function. But why does that matter? So I just want to illustrate one thing that can go wrong if we try to think about delta as a function. So let's imagine we've got some sequence, d sigma, which goes to g, which we want to think of as delta. For which the limit as sigma goes to 0 of g sigma of x is 0, x not equal to 0, and the integral of g sigma of x is 1 for sigma greater than 0. F is one example, but this argument won't really depend on our choice of f. So we have a function like this that is approaching delta is approaching in some sense the delta, then the limit function g should be able to be fit into the boxes like this, where the width of the bottom box is epsilon, and all the boxes have height 1 and half the width of the box below it. So we should be able to fit this limit function inside these boxes in the following sense. For each epsilon and each x, we can find a sigma naught so that g sigma of x lies inside the boxes for all sigma less than sigma naught. So that's saying if we pick pick an epsilon and pick an x, say here, if we go far enough down our sequence of functions, we can the value of g sigma of x will be below the top box at that particular value of x for all sigma below some value. So for f sigma, we can choose the top hat function we considered before. For f sigma, we can choose sigma naught equals x. Then if sigma is less than sigma naught, sigma is less than x, which from our definition over here, so tells us that, so x is greater than sigma, which is greater than sigma over 2, so that tells us the value of f sigma of x is 0, then tells us that f sigma of x is 0, which is less than epsilon for any epsilon. So we can fit, in this sense, we can fit f sigma inside of these boxes. And it's not restricted to this example. We construct other examples that become more and more peaked and have satisfy those two properties. And, integral is 1 for any element of the sequence, and the limit goes to 0 in each point. So if we can do this, then the limit function, g, lies inside the boxes. And that tells us that the integral of g has to be less than the area of the boxes, which is just epsilon plus epsilon over 2 plus epsilon over 4 plus epsilon over 8, et cetera, which just sums to 2 epsilon. And this has to be true for any epsilon. So that tells us that this integral of the limit function is 0, which is not 1, which is the limit of the integral. So So here we've first taken the limit sigma of 0, then done the integral. Over here we've done first the integral and then taken the limit. And we get different answers. So this G is not a good candidate, if we define it this way, for the delta function, because its integral is not 1. So the order matters here. For those of you who are familiar with the subject, the reason for this is that there's a difference between pointwise convergence and uniform convergence. If you don't know what that means, we won't discuss it that much further, but that's the reason for we get this contradiction. Any questions? So far. Okay, so I hope I've convinced you that it's a bad idea to think about delta as a function. So now I want to tell you how we should think about delta. So the problem, another way to put where the problem came from, is we were trying to think about delta as an object that existed outside of, if we took it outside of an integral. We couldn't get problems like this as long as we were just considering the entire time things like the integral of delta against some function. So if we have the integral of delta times a function, what the integral of delta is doing is it's mapping that function onto a real or complex number. So the way we're going to think about delta is as a, and distributions in general, is as a map from functions to real or complex numbers. And so as long as we think about delta in that way, we won't run across any problems like this. And so distributions are maps from functions to numbers. And the first thing we need to decide is which functions are we going to allow our distributions to act on. And so the functions that we allow distributions to act on are known as test functions. So the more restrictions we place on the test functions that we allow our distributions to act on, the larger the space of distributions we'll get. So I'm going to choose for most of the lectures to deal with a very restrictive test function space. So I'll denote the test function space by this curly D. And I'm going to choose the set of C infinity functions with compact support. So what does that mean? So C infinity means continuous with infinitely many derivatives. And compact support means that it vanishes outside of a set of intervals, finite set. Okay. Can anyone give me an example of such a function?
What does it say? The n vanishes out of the...
Outside of a finite set of intervals. So it might, a function...
Like a Gaussian?
If we ignore, let's just look at a function with compact support so I can sketch a picture of it. So here's f of x, here's x. So maybe it's identically 0 over here. It does something in some interval. Maybe it's identically 0 again, and some other interval does something else, and then it's identically 0. So there's only some finite regions where the function is not identically 0. That's what compact support means.
But then, won't that have like problems of smoothness in the intervals that where the function begins and where it starts to be 0?
That's a good question.
But
and
it seems smooth.
The example I drew probably isn't smooth.
Yeah.
So my question remains, I'll come back to that in a second, but my question remains, can anyone come up with an example of a function in this set? There's one simple one.
F of x equals 0.
Yes, that's a good example.
Yeah.
that's what I was, the simple one I was looking for. So f of x equals 0 is a good example. As a challenge, can anyone come up with a non-zero, non-identically 0 one?
Have to be 0 at more than one point for it to count as an interval? So like a sine function?
Like a sine? A sine function is C infinity. It does not have compact support because every, except for at a finite number of points, it's non-zero. So there's no finite set of bounded intervals that's important, I should say. In particular, any function with compact support is there's a largest x at which it's non-zero, and there's a smallest x at which it's non-zero. Okay, so I'll give you an example. It's not so easy to come up with, but let me give you an example of a function that is C infinity, has compact support, and is not identically 0. So here's an example. You can choose a function that is like e to the minus 1 over 1 minus x squared for x less than 1 and 0 for x greater than or equal to 1. OK, so this at x equals plus or minus 1, this is like e to the minus 1 over infinity. So that gives us 0. And if we take any number of derivatives, this exponential will win over whatever we pull out. And then so we can match it smoothly onto to 0 at those points. So this is the test function space we'll consider. It's highly restrictive. We're considering this highly restrictive set of test functions to let us get a large set of distributions. Most of what I'll say won't depend too much on our choice of test function space. For instance, if we just considered functions with a few derivatives, that would also work for most of what I'm going to say. Or instead of demanding that the functions are identically 0 for x big enough or x small enough, we could just demand that they go to 0 sufficiently quickly. That wouldn't change that much. But some of the derivations will be simpler here. Consider an example in tutorial on Monday where it might be a better idea to choose a different test function space. Occasionally, it's easier to choose a different test function space, but we'll stick with this one for now. So this. Test functions are vector space, and so D is a vector space, and we can define a dual vector space. Of linear functionals of from our test function space to R. We could consider complex numbers here as well. It won't change very much. So what I mean by functionals, so a functional is a map from a function to, or it's a generalization of a function that instead of taking a set of numbers as an input, it takes a entire function as an input. For now, we'll consider functionals whose outputs are just real numbers. And linear means that if u is in D star, then u of alpha phi plus beta psi is alpha u of phi plus beta psi dot u of psi. So this means this is linear. And okay, the fact that it's a functional means, so this part means that u of phi is a real number for any u that's in the dual space and any phi that's in the test function space. Questions on that? Okay. And so this is almost the same as the space of distributions. For the space of distributions, we're just going to put one additional restriction. So D prime is the set of linear, continuous, linear and continuous functionals . So continuous means that if we've got a sequence of test functions that converges to a limit test function uniformly, then if we act with a distribution on the sequence, the limit will converge. This will converge to u acting on the limit test function. Okay, so the distributions are linear, continuous, and finite. So for notation, so I'll often be using this functional notation. I'll often also write, for instance, if we act with the delta distribution on a test function, that just gives us the test function evaluated at 0. And perhaps the more familiar way to write that is the integral of delta of x, phi of x, dx is phi of 0. So this is the notation I'll mostly use. Sometimes I go back to this. This is somewhat less precise because we have this delta of x. Delta of x, it's not defined. But as long as we keep inside the integral, we're generally OK. If you look at some of the references I posted on the wiki, you'll sometimes see some of the references will use this notation. Where delta phi is phi of 0. This is a pairing, not an inner product, and it's easy to get confused there, so I'm going to stick to this notation. So besides delta, which is the distribution, because it's linear, continuous, and finite. We act with it on sum of two functions. We'll just get the sum of the values of those functions at 0. It's continuous. The sequence of test functions converges to a limit. Then the value uniformly, then the value of the limit, the delta, the value of the function at 0 will converge to the will converge to u of phi, and it's finite because for test functions, the test function is continuous, and it's 0 for x sufficiently large or small. So test functions are bounded. So give you a few examples and give you a few minutes to think about which of these are distributions, and then you can discuss with your classmates and see if you can come to a consensus. So I'll give you a few examples and see if you can tell me which of these are distributions. So here's one. The first one is just integral of the function squared, test function squared. The second one is just sum of some derivatives of the test function at 0 multiplied by some real numbers. Third example is 1 if phi of 0 is positive and 0 otherwise. And the fourth example will be integral of phi of x over x squared dx. So my question to you is, which if any of these are distributions, and if any of them are not, why not? take a minute, think about it yourself, and then try to convince your neighbors if you disagree. The nth derivative.
Incontinuous means that he's defining as phi equals to phi, so that's true. Yeah, okay. What's that? Sorry. What's that f?
Why is that?
Phi zero.
This t of phi.
No. Above. The w.
Are you? If.
Oh, if.
If.
If the integral is defined from somewhere to the integral is zero.
Yeah, what if this guy is zero?
You would say, this might be pretty okay. So if the integral is zero, it might not be finite.
No, this is not even linear.
So this is not finite.
Because it's all known.
If there's no problem,
The real line.
The functions are all
But the fact that adding psi can give you this guy. Imagine that phi 0 is and psi 0 is minus 3. Then this is not.
What if phi plus w psi?
Yeah. You one.
Not all of you got through all of them, but I want to move on, so we can let's discuss these one at a time, and there'll be other examples we can work on in tutorial. Okay, so who can explain the first one? Anyone know, is this a distribution or not? And if not, why? See if your head's running. Victor?
It doesn't seem linear. Like, you.
Okay, very good.
No.
Not linear.
From afar.
So if we take U of lambda phi, that will be lambda squared U of phi, which is not lambda U of phi. It's not linear. Good. What about the second one?
Seems okay. It seems okay, but there can be some problems. Like, how can we assure that if the function is converging, the derivatives also converge? I'm not sure about that.
It's continuous and infinitely differentiable. So that's right. This is it's linear. It's manifestly linear. It's continuous because there's nothing funny going on. And it's finite because our functions are continuous with infinitely many derivatives, and they're zero for x sufficiently large and small, so they have to be bounded. And all their derivatives have to be bounded. So it's finite for that reason. What about the third one?
It's not linear.
Not continuous.
Yes. It's not linear. Okay, good. And I also heard it's not continuous. Somebody explain that?
Step function,
right. So we could have a sequence of functions that approach so that the value of those test functions at zero approaches zero from below. And then we would get a different thing if we first acted with W and then took the limit, or first took the limit and then acted with W. So it's not continuous or linear. What about the last one? Anyone get there?
Might
not
be fine.
No? Why not?
It's not well defined for all 5x.
Yeah.
Right. No, it's not necessarily finite or well defined. I'm calling it finite. Basically mean the same thing. We can come up with a function that's a test function that basically looks like 1 near x equals 0, and then this interval will diverge.
But if A and B are the AB interval is outside of x equals 0, it's okay, right?
Yes, then it would be okay. But, implicitly, I was putting these limits.
Yeah. Phi of x is x cubed or greater than?
There are certainly test functions we could choose where this interval would converge, but if t is going to be distribution, then it has to converge for all possible test functions.
X equals 0, and then elsewhere something else.
Any questions on this? Everyone clear on what a distribution is?
Yeah, there's always a finite. Oh, yeah, it'll be not finite.
It's not x
cubed. Actually, x squared is 7. Because it's even. That is actually odd, but x squared.
Is there a question?
Yeah,
Okay, so for the next part of lecture, and see if we finish today or not, we'll continue tomorrow. We'll discuss some operations we can do on distributions. Three operations. So derivation will be the first. Then multiplication with a function. And finally, we'll discuss composition. Okay. So derivatives distributions. So the first thing you might try to write down is the definition from your first year calculus class. This doesn't work. We can't, in general, define the value of a distribution at a point. So we can't use this. Some distributions are functions. In particular, I mentioned that locally integrable functions are distributions. And in defining all of these operations, we're going to take inspiration from those functions. So for those distributions, we could make sense of this, but there's no immediate way to generalize that. So we're, this is essentially a dead end. But there's another way we can try to define distributions, taking inspiration from those distributions that are locally integrable functions. Locally integrable functions. Thank you for asking. So a function is locally integrable if its integral over any finite region is finite. So for instance, the function 1, just the function that's identically 1, we can integrate that over any finite region, and we'll get something finite, even though its integral over the entire real line diverges. 1 is not in our test function space, but 1 is locally integrable. And it defines a, I say it is a distribution. What I really mean is it induces a distribution. So it's an aside. So if we have f of x equals 1, then we can, let's call it u. This induces a distribution, and we can say that u of phi is the integral of u of x, phi of x, dx. And if u is just 1, then this defines it. That's a distribution. So we use the usually use the same symbol for the locally integrable function than the distribution it induces. So in defining all these operations, we'll have in mind distributions that are induced by locally integrable functions. So then we have some idea what we're doing. So for a locally integrable function, we can write the derivative of that distribution acting on a test function as follows. Write it just as u prime of x, phi of x, dx. This doesn't make sense in general, but it does make sense if u is a locally integrable function that has a derivative. So this works sometimes, at least for some examples. And if we can do this, then we can integrate by parts. And we'll get u of x, phi of x, evaluated at plus and minus infinity, minus the integral of u of x by prime of x dx. So the steps we've done so far are OK as long as u is a function. If that's the case, then we can do more. So in our test function space, our test functions have compact support, which means they vanish identically outside of a finite region. So this term is 0. Phi of x is just identically 0 at infinity and some beyond some maximal value of x, and the same at minus infinity. So this term is 0. No matter what phi is doing, u is doing, phi is going to 0 faster. So this term goes away. And we just get this. And so this works as long as u is a function. And we'll just take this as a definition. The weak or distributional derivative can be defined u prime and phi is defined to be minus u acting at phi prime. And we can immediately generalize this to the nth derivative. This is a minus 1 to the n u of phi n. So this is the definition, and we'll demand that this holds for all distributions, not only those that are locally integrable.
Sir, what does it mean ux there? Because u is a map from the space of functions to.
So this doesn't make sense in general. That's why I put the question mark here.
Okay.
It does make sense for a subset of distributions, like this example, where we have a local integrable function, like the function is identically 1. So that's a function. It also induces a distribution through this map. So we can say it's somewhat an abuse of terminology, but we often say that this function is a distribution. And what we mean by that is that this function induces this map.
OK. So it's you can do that when you have some distribution that induces some function that you can use in the integral.
That's right. So this makes that sense for that particular subset of distributions. This, we're demanding, holds for all distributions. So let's see how this works. Start with a simple application where you might be able to guess the answer. Our example will be the Heaviside function, or step function. And so this is a locally integrable function, so it defines a distribution. And the distribution works like this. We act with the Heaviside distribution on the test function, we get the integral of the Heaviside function times the test function, which is just the integral from 0 to infinity of the test function. And it's guaranteed this is guaranteed to be a distribution because this is locally integrable. But we could also check that this is manifestly linear and continuous, and it's finite, again, because this integral doesn't actually go to infinity for any given test function. It only has support on a compact interval, so it's an integral of a bounded function on a bounded interval. So this is finite. OK, so let's use our definition of the distributional derivative to compute the derivative of the Heaviside, our step function. So to do that, you need to act with the step Heaviside distribution on a test function. And by definition, that gives us minus theta of phi prime. And we can rewrite that as minus the integral from 0 to infinity of phi prime of x dx. And this is an integral we can do. We get minus phi of x evaluated at 0 and infinity. But phi of infinity is 0 because it has compact support. So this is just phi of 0, which we can rewrite as delta of phi. The delta distribution just picks out the value of the test function at 0. And since this works for any test function phi, then we have that the derivative of the Heaviside is the delta. Perhaps you could have guessed that. And this method is useful for other cases that are less intuitive. So let's look at a second example. Let's compute the derivative of the natural log of the absolute value of x. Okay. So let's go through the same procedure. So write this as minus the integral phi prime natural log of x dx. And the natural next step to do here would be to integrate by parts. If we did that, we'd have a 1 over x integral of phi times 1 over x. 1 over x is not locally integrable, so we might worry there. But we can, without changing the value of this distribution, rewrite this in the following way. So we can write this as the limit as epsilon goes to 0. The integral from minus infinity to minus epsilon plus integral from epsilon to infinity of phi prime of x natural log of x dx. So what have we done? We've just cut out a infinitesimal region around 0. And I claim that that doesn't change the value of the integral. But it does leave out the problematic part for the integration by parts, because the 1 over x is not locally integral because its behavior around 0. So we're cutting out the problematic part. And we haven't changed the value of the distribution.
Question.
Yes?
Why are you taking the epsilons to be the same on both sides? Like, why are you approaching to zero at the same speed on both sides?
Yes. So we don't have to do that. So that's I originally wrote this as a definition. And so we could have put in different factors here. We get.
There wouldn't be problems of convergence or something like that if we went in different velocities.
If we went in different velocities, no. That's a good question. And so if we changed.
Because, for example, logarithm of x.
So let's look at why this is not, why the part we cut out is zero, and that we'll see what happens if we change the direction. Change the velocity we go to zero, both sides.
Yeah, it's not.
So the part we cut out, the cutout part, is the limit as epsilon goes to zero. From minus epsilon to epsilon of the log of x, phi of x, dx. And the absolute value of this has to be less than the limit epsilon goes to zero of the absolute value of the log of the absolute value. Minus the absolute value of 5x, which has to be less than or equal to the integral of log of the absolute value of x times the maximum of the absolute value of 5x. And we can put, now this is doesn't depend on x, we can pull this out. And we get this. Just rewriting the integral from zero minus epsilon to zero in terms of the integral from zero to epsilon. And this is just max of phi of x limit epsilon goes to zero of minus 2x log of x minus 1 from zero to epsilon. And that's just zero. Do you see?
Shouldn't all those side side be side primes for the line?
Yes, they should be.
Oh.
Doesn't change anything. Part we cut out is zero. If we went. If we took the limits at different rates, it wouldn't really change this argument. We'd still go to zero. We'd get a different thing. And so that's why we need to, in order to have a unique answer for the derivative, we need to define how fast we go to zero on both sides of the region we cut out. So that's a choice. Okay, so we didn't change the value of the distribution as we cut out this region around zero. And now we can do the same thing we did before and just integrate by parts. And we get this integral plus two boundary terms The boundary terms at infinity vanish for the same reason as before. And these terms we can rewrite as phi of epsilon minus phi of minus epsilon times log of epsilon, which is approximately the same as if epsilon is small as 2 times phi prime of 0 times epsilon log of epsilon. Which goes to 0 as epsilon goes to 0. So these boundary terms also vanish. And we're just left with this term, these two terms. And so what we've shown is that the derivative is just given by this. And the distribution defined by this integral is one of the probably the second most important distribution that's not a locally integrable function. And this here is what's known as the principal value distribution. And we'll discuss this more in tutorial on Monday, and this is actually closely related to a distribution we'll be using all the time in quantum field theory, the I epsilon distribution. So I'll just wrap up for a minute or two, and then we'll resume discussion of these distributions on Monday. So what have we done today? We have defined distributions. So distributions are linear, continuous, and finite maps from our test function space to the real numbers. And we've seen that we can define the derivative of a distribution through this equation that it's the derivative of a distribution acting on a test function is the distribution acting on minus the derivative of the test function. And we'll continue on Monday. Any questions?
I had a question.
Yes.
There was, when we were talking about the distribution, the ones that are distributions and the ones that are not.
Yes.
There was one where we had like phi equals to integral of phi of x over x squared.
Yes.
Right? I didn't really understand why it's not finite. Because the examples we were giving were functions that didn't have compact support. For example, putting x to the 4 in the phi of x, that
okay.
doesn't have compact
support. So we could come up with a function that's, say, identically f of a test function phi of x that's identically one in a region around zero, and then we match it in a similar way that we did with the e to the minus one over x squared. We match it with infinitely many derivatives onto something that goes, and then match it again.
Yeah. Okay.
So we could construct a function like this,
okay.
And this function will not the action of that the distribution defined by the one integral of phi of x over x squared with this test function will not be finite.
But both functions are going to zero when we approach infinity.
And infinity is fine. It's near zero that would be the problem.
Okay. So what you mean by finite is that the like. The expression inside the integral diverges at some point, and not the integral itself.
The integral will diverge.
The integral will diverge? OK.
All We can discuss more after class. Yes?
I'm not entirely sure whether I'm quite understanding the relationship between distributions and functions. So we've said a distribution is a map from functions to real, so there's linear, continuous, and finite. Right?
Yes.
And we've said that distributions are sort of a generalized version of functions, but functions don't map functions to reals, right? They map numbers to numbers.
That's right. But one thing we can do with functions is we have a one thing we can do with a function if we've got a function f of x. One thing we can do with it is integrate it against another function, say 5 of x. So one thing we can do with a function is construct an integral of 5x, f of x, 5x, dx. And so through every function defines a map. So we can define a map from another test function to the real or complex numbers through a map like this, where we just insert the test function. So that's you're absolutely right that distributions don't have values at a point, and in that sense, they're not. They're not a generalization of function, but in this other sense, that they are.
Just then to follow up, the delta distribution.
Yes.
So say we consider now in the distributional sense, so we have delta acting on some test function. That's then the integral of delta multiplied by our test function.
Yes, that's right.
So then that delta inside the integral, that's not really the distribution, right? That's something that we use to define the distribution.
That's right. So you should think of this underlined this part as being the distribution, and this is so we have f acting on phi, and the action of f is the integral of this part.
So in the delta function case, the delta that's inside the integral, what object exactly is that?
It doesn't have an independent meaning. So that's the sense in which distributions are generalizations of the functions. It makes sense to have expressions like this, where we put a function here. It also makes sense in more general contexts, like if we put a delta here.
Define that delta that you put into the integral.
You can't.
Oh, okay.
Which is why I think I said that this notation is if I didn't say it, I should have. This notation is imprecise but useful. If you want to be really rigorous about everything, just write it like that. Yes.
Sorry, just to be super clear. What exactly is the definition of the function that we're using?
The test function?
No, just like a function. So we've defined a function space, and we've said that functions live in function spaces. But what exactly is a function?
A function is a map, say, from the real numbers to the real numbers, or from its domain to its
image. No other properties or axioms or weird things?
No. Any other questions?
If phi is also a function and f of x is also a distribution, so I can also say that f is also is a distribution of phi. Right? You write in that form.
F, yeah.
It's possible, right?
It's possible. The test function could. Test functions are a local integral, so they induce.
Space of distributions like much bigger than the space of functions, or is it like one-to-one?
The space of distributions depends on the test function space you construct, but Yes. It contains objects like the delta and this distribution that are not functions. It also excludes that you can have functions that are not locally integrable, and they may not define a distribution. So there might not be one might not be strictly bigger than the other. It somewhat depends on how you define your test function.
You can have functions in D that are not locally integrable.
In the test function space?
Yeah.
In principle, you can choose any test function space you like. If you choose the wrong one, your set of distributions might be too small to be useful.
Okay. I thought we were choosing one test function space.
In lecture, yes, we are.
Okay.
There are other applications where you might want to consider different test function spaces.
Okay.
Any more questions? Okay. I'll see you on Monday.